What's up? It's your boys Jordan and Abraham. As always, he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. And I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. Now, if you're listening to us on Spotify, please take a moment to rate us 5 stars and feel free to reach out to us at our YouTube page, Friends Who Read One Piece, or on Twitter at FWROP Pod. We look forward to hearing from all of you. Now,
Abraham, before we begin, I just want to say a little something, because I know before this show, I mentioned how I shaved and how no one, not you, not Alex, not either of our honorable guests, Katie and Eric, noticed that I had shaved. So I feel
well, I noticed.
very
I just didn't point it
disappointed,
out.
very disappointed that no one is noticing me and my bright smile. But you know what? The crazy thing is, I also got new glasses. So I feel like I just changed up my whole steez. And
No.
no one even noticed. I mean, maybe
Yeah.
it's just because I just always look so swaggy, and I still look swaggy, and I'll admit the glasses are the same shape and a kind of similar style. But
It's the
I'm feeling
bonnet.
a
The
little
bonnet's
bit.
taken away from him. The bonnet was the first thing I noticed.
I have to agree. It's bright blue.
If there's one thing that we've learned from breakdancing at the Olympics, which I actually wish I had remembered this and made that our last topic, it's that apparently, do-rags do increase the style even of Lithuanian women breakdancers. So, bonnet, same kind of thing,
Yeah. It's just aura.
It's just aura, man. It's aura, it's swag. And no one noticed. No one noticed my nice new glasses or my nice clean-shaven face.
Maybe next
Thank you,
time.
friends.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, on that note, we have no chapter this week, but it's not going to stop us from putting out content because we love all of you guys so much. So, Jordan, why don't you tell me what you think's coming up in the series?
Listen, man, you already know what I want to talk about, what I've been talking about, what I think is going to happen. Something with this giant robot versus Saturn, I think, will be very interesting. Now, I want you to know, as you know, I read the spoilers every week, and I actually went online to see. Sometimes when it's a whole Shonen Jump break, they'll come out a little bit early. And there's just occasionally there are these funny ones that come out on, like, our pirate folk. It's a fake spoiler Reddit or something along those lines. And these ones started out really excitingly with MF making some big last stand against Saturn. And then Saturn drew a summoning circle on the ground, and then Buggy showed up. And that was when well, actually, at that point, I was still a little bit in. At that point, I was still a little bit in. And then it got a little more ridiculous. And, Imu was begging on his knees. And I was like, okay, this is fake. But I'm really interested in what's going to happen with the giant robot and Saturn. I know we've talked about it for a while, but I just feel at this point, like if we're actually ready to leave Egghead, that the resolution to both the giant robot being in the story, the resolution to Luffy versus all of the Elder Stars and Saturn, who's just showed up, is gonna be really disappointing. And so I feel like yes, we got this giant haki bomb, but if we leave in the way we are right now, the world around us will have changed with this knowledge, but nothing has really changed in terms of the Straw Hats versus the Elder Stars. There haven't been any significant power-ups. There hasn't been anything really significant in terms of how we understand different, like, nothing has really changed about that power balance, despite the fact that we have seen Bonnie really get stronger, unless that becomes a really more important thing. And so I really believe that a little bit more has to happen with Emmett rather than him just getting completely destroyed by Saturn. I think there's going to be a little bit of fighting left, and maybe he can find a way to take one of them with him.
I think Emmett's role in the story is done. I think I agree it was kind of an underwhelming moment for what we got. People were expecting like some kind of like nuke, like some, and it was probably the strongest haki display we've seen in the story, but just like, he pulled the string and it was like Joaquin put it, Joaquin was really, really disappointed by all of this, and I get it, right? I don't think Emmett has anything more he's going to add to the story. I think that he's pretty clearly like, rusted and broken down, and this was like a last resort kind of attack, and it did work. It sent like, all the other Gorosei flying away. I do think Saturn's future is interesting in terms of the stuff that you brought up, because I don't think Saturn is necessarily going to make it back to the Mirage Wars, as we talked about last week, that it might give the Blackbeard Pirates an opportunity to impersonate him and infiltrate into the Mirage Wars. But I don't think someone like Emmett is going to be the one to take him out. I think it's going to be, it might be someone like, the like the Straw Hats, or maybe he just, happens to get abandoned on the island because all the Marines were like sent packing. I don't know, right?
Yeah, well, I'm
I
saying,
think
how else is he gonna not make it back to Marajoa besides Emmett destroying him?
there might just be a delay in him getting back, right? Like, let's say it takes him like 2 weeks to get back to Mirageoise, right? But the Blackbeard Pirates get there a lot more quickly, and they happen to like impersonate him, and and they're just like, oh yeah, this great cleansing, huh? Like, what are we doing, right? And like just collecting it, you know what I mean? Just like low key collecting information, and then Saturn shows up 2 weeks later,
Bro,
and they're like, what?
that was the least devious sounding characterization of what Blackbeard's plan could possibly be.
No, but you know what I mean though, right? Like, there's a lot of information that you
I
could
do know
gain.
what you mean. I need you to
Yeah.
say it a
That's
little
my
bit
point.
more deviously. Like, I need a little bit more than that.
You I'm not an actor, bro. You gotta get come see me in my shows if you want to see me act. Today I'm just here to talk about One Piece. But no, I think I don't think Saturn is necessarily going to die on the island. I think he might it just might be that his return is delayed, and that gives the Blackbeard Pirates an opportunity to infiltrate and do their thing. But I guess I can't see how Emmett takes out Ogorase. Maybe someone like Bonnie does to get her revenge, and that's, how Saturn dies. Because I disagree with what you said about the powers not shifting all that much over the course of Egghead. Bonnie having control over all of the Pacifista is actually huge. Like, that's massive in terms of swinging the balance of power. Not in favor of the Straw Hats, because I think the world government still, and with the Marines with them right now, are still stronger than any individual crew. But that is not something that's insignificant by any means.
I'll give you to I don't think the pacifista thing is as significant, in part because we saw the world government moving towards seeing the world government move towards the Seraphim as their next more advanced technology project, and also in part because like we saw what Venus Jero could do to a million Seraphim. He was taking them out like they were just like pawns. So I think But I do think that Bonnie having some kind of awakening definitely gives some level, extra level of significant strength. But I feel like I need a little bit more for an entire arc happening. It's not like we overthrew a kingdom. We got this big, long speech from Vegapunk that was really cool. But the world government's strength, or like the villains of the arc, are basically getting away completely unscathed at this point, besides Vegapunk making.
Yeah, I think you're thinking about the Pacifista in the wrong way, right? I don't think they're obviously not top level fighters, and not going to be fighting Gorosei and whatnot, right? But a single old Pacifista was as strong as the entire Straw Hat crew pre-time skip, right? So it's not, and like there are like hundreds, if not thousands, of them, right? So it does matter. They are, and we saw that havoc that they were wrecking on like a Buster Call that the Marines, brought on, until Venus Juro and them did their thing. So I'm not saying they're going to be fighting these top tier characters, but like the fact that the world government doesn't have those anymore is, I think, a big deal. And for your second point, I think at the end of the day, Egghead is still just a setup arc. It's a long set. It's probably the biggest setup arc that we've had so far, right? Because it's over 50 chapters. But I've even though I thought Saturn would go down at some point during this arc, and I thought that would be the incident early on. I think at this point we're clearly sailing away. Like the arc is wrapping up. And Emmett just, like I've said this before, he's not a significant enough character to merit taking down someone as big as Dagorosei. Like, this is a character that we just met 10, like, I don't know, not 10 chapters ago, but like very, very recently, right? And I'm sure he was an important member of Joy Boy's crew, but yeah.
I'll say that I think at this point in the story, it feels to me mostly that it's not like someone. So Blackbeard, for example, feels like someone who we've had this long, deep character development with and have a real sense of who he is and a real personal sense of grievance against him. With the Elder Stars, I kind of feel like they are evil because we know they're evil and represent the world government, but we don't have that deep personal sense of I hate you guys. That would make me feel really bad about someone like Emmett just taking one of them out. Although maybe if it was just like all of them, I feel like we still need a little bit more for it to, like, I feel like it would still feel okay at this point. And I just don't know how else Saturn would manage to not get back unless, for example, he ends up committing some kind of crazy suicide attack that he was left by the Elder Stars to do. That would be kind of fun. That would be kind of fun. Not saying it necessarily be likely, but I think that would be kind of fun. I don't know though. What do you think is going to happen, Abraham? What do you think we have coming up in the story?
Yeah, so mine is going to be a bit more like long-term, big picture stuff. But what the fight with the Gorosei has convinced me is that Luffy is clearly not strong enough to take on the world right now, which is crazy because he has advanced Conqueror's Haki. He was going blow for blow with Kaido. He has awakened his devil fruit. But I watch him do something like punch Warkiri and retreat his fist back in pain. And, it just seems like there's another level that Luffy is going to have to reach. And it's not necessarily going to be like a gear six. I don't think something like that's going to happen. I think his fruit is his fruit at this point. But in terms of his mastery of Haki and whatnot, I'm of the opinion that Luffy is going to have to level up one more time before he's ready to face the world. And that's probably going to be when we run into the red-haired pirates, right? Because those guys do appear to be like the Haki masters. None of them have devil fruits and whatnot. So as crazy as it is to say, because I feel like Luffy is so OP at the moment, I don't think we're done with his growth in the series from a power scaling perspective.
So, you think that in Elbaf, we will have the final most important power up that Luffy can have, and that will crystallize in a Davy back fight against the red-haired pirates?
So I'll say I never said most important. I think his most important power up is Gear Fifth because
Sure,
that's the
yeah.
awakening of the Ninja Fruit.
So from this point in the story, the kind of like capstone power up is going to happen in a Davy back fight against the Red.
So how did Luffy learn about Advanced Conqueror's Haki is my question to you back in
Fighting
Wano.
Kaido.
How did he learn about it?
He realized from fighting Kaido that.
Right. So he and granted it was in the in the middle in the context of a battle, right? But he's like he observed him and he's like, oh, this is what you're doing with your attacks and whatnot, right? And so I don't think that like while Haki blooms in battle, I don't think Luffy is going to leave Elbaf and be like, oh, I have this mastery over this form of Haki that Shanks has. But I think in the course of a Davy back fight, that he can observe Shanks doing certain things, his crew can observe Shanks' crew doing certain things and be like, oh, this is like another level that we don't have right now. And then maybe down the line in another conflict with maybe a crew like the Blackbeard Pirates, that's when that Haki blooms.
But then, how are they going to win the Davy back fight against Shanks?
Because there's more, like, I don't think there's more to just these Davey back fights and to fights than just hockey, right? Like, I think Devil Fruits being equal, yeah, hockey is superior to, like, the person with superior hockey is going to win, right? But like Shanks doesn't have the Nika fruit, right? So I don't know. We'll see. There's a reason why I'm not Oda, right? I'm not an author. But like
There's a reason
yeah.
you're not Oda, and that's why we're not going to having a baby
Bro.
back fight on Elf
Bro,
after
bro,
that.
bro. Let me tell you something.
Hey,
You ain't Oda either. I don't know who gassed you up.
I never said I'm Oda. That's
I
why
never
the
said I
theorizing.
said the exact opposite. I never
That's
said I'm Oda
why
either.
the Yeah, and I just wanted to remind you that that's true. Hey, listen, there's a reason that the thread on our Discord channel for theorizing that I made up is called Theories and Crackpots, because I like
Yeah,
a
because
good
you are the crackhead
crackpot
smoking out of
theory.
your
No,
crack
no,
pipe.
no, no, no. I like crackpot theory. Listen, I have never had a crack dealer call and ask for me while we're on the show.
Happened
That
all
has
the
never
time.
happened to me.
They when have they rung
They
up my
call and
phone? It's
ask for you
always your
three times.
phone.
They call your phone, they call my phone asking for you. I don't even know how they got my number. But the crack dealer, they called you, man. Like, I don't know what to say. I love a good crackpot theory.
I've never picked up my phone in the middle of a podcast and
Listen,
there'd been a crack dealer on there.
I
We got like three or four content of episodes where you've been on the other
the
line with a crack dealer.
one in St. Louis, I acted like it was your phone. I'm not gonna remember. The one in St. Louis, I'm like, wait, your phone's ringing. But I think that what is interesting, like the thing I'm curious about with this is exactly how we get a power up from Luffy at this point in Gear Fifth and have it feel like there's a sense of gravity behind it. I know that Moore did a video on this a while ago. Can there be serious fights? I definitely feel like there was a sense of these fights in Elf, on Egghead being able to be serious. But I also feel like in the way through a fight we unlocked Future Sight, in the way where he had this major power up where he unlocked Gear Fifth, I sort of don't understand almost exactly how he can unlock a power beyond that anymore and what that would look like.
Well, I feel like he would have to be put into a pressured situation where, like, his back is against the wall, right? Kind of like in Marineford when Ace is about to be executed, and all of a sudden, his Conqueror's Haki comes out, right? Because
Well,
he
here,
was in
yeah,
some.
I actually have a better way of putting it, exactly what I'm thinking about. Like, it's sort of if he can take a tree and eat it like a corn cob, and then turn it into like a bat that says, 56, and hit a home run with Saturn for it. It's sort of like there's all these ridiculous creative things that he can do at this point that it would feel sort of superfluous for him to actually end up with a more serious power up, because it's like you can make a baseball bat and hit Saturn. But what do you need a hockey power up for at this point?
So I think one of the big things is if his fight against Blackbeard is when this blooms, right? You got to remember that Blackbeard's ability is to take away your devil fruit, right? So if he's fighting Blackbeard and he doesn't really have access to the Nika fruit because of the Yami Yami no Mi, then he might be in a situation where he doesn't have that to fall back on, right?
That's fair, but I do think we don't yet know exactly what Blackbeard's power is. We understand that he made it so Ace couldn't do his thing. I sort of wonder with something like the Mythical
Wait,
Zone Giga Fruit.
I feel like we do, right? His whole thing, because even when he fought Luffy, right? He grabbed him and then he like chopped him in like a Impel Down, and he was like, "I'm not rubber. Like, what the hell?" I think
Fair
his whole
enough.
thing is like, if he touches you, that his he it's like being touched by the sea, right? You don't have your ability anymore.
I guess at that point I was thinking about it, the one in Impel Down, in the same way as Luffy getting hurt by Sentomaru because he didn't have an understanding of haki, and so someone like Sentomaru was able to do that. But I do think that makes sense as well if it's sort of similar to what happened with Ace. That'd be kind of wild if in the end fight with Blackbeard we have this entire Nika thing and he can't do it. To be fair, I still think the possibility of Blackbeard becoming some kind of mythical god that then you have like the different types of mythical gods fighting would be interesting, but it would definitely lend itself towards a sort of, the kind of like knock down the knife edge death match from Yu Yu Hakusho type feel where you can't be jumping around and you're just kind of like Luffy and Blackbeard after having toppled the world government and in knife edge death match fighting each other, punching and seeing who has the guts to stand up at the end. All right, he's just gonna let me he's just let me get away with that one. Okay, I think it's time for us then to move on to S class and F class, where we find theories in the internet and rate them so you don't have to. Alex, you want to get us started?
Yeah, I would love to. So our first theory is around the Will of D and comes from Joy Boy Theories. He speculates that the Will of D must be something that exists tangibly somewhere, not just as a concept. He notes that we've seen Luffy's heartbeat and his Nika form has the ability to power the ancient robot. And on this podcast, we have already discussed theories. Shout out to my wife, Katie. Well, that Nika's hair is drawn very similar to the Mother Flame. According to this theory, this is no coincidence. Joy Boy Theory speculates that the Mother Flame is built by harnessing the power of souls, and that because the ancient kingdom has harnessed the ability to power things with joy, the Will of D is also the Mother Flame, something that can power the world just waiting to be awakened when it feels enough joy, the characteristic we've seen spread throughout each member of the D clan. Abraham, what are you thinking about this one? S class or F class?
This is an S-class theory. I like this theory. I, you know, it you know, I think there are D clan members who aren't don't look that joyful, like Law and Dragon and them, but like I think this is a pretty cool idea. I've never heard of this before. Tangible makes it seem like, oh, you know, like there is. I don't know if it's actually something ten like Can if it will actually necessarily be something tangible. I still am on the train where I feel I think this whole the whole concept of the Will of D is something that is intangible. But I don't know. I think he makes some great points in that the giant robot is powered by does appear to be powered by the drums of liberation that yeah. I don't want to be closed-minded. I feel like he, there's a lot of promise with this theory.
It's interesting because I am into a lot of components of this theory. I am into the idea that the Will of D could be something that exists tangibly. I'm into the idea that there's some kind of, as you know, the ancient technology in this world being super advanced, the idea that they could have some kind of ability to harness the joy of souls, to harness the joy of people. I know there was a Euteron theory a while back about the power of love that I thought was potentially really interesting. You know, where we see Sanji's heart burn, things like that. I just can't get to the connection between why does the Will of D have to also be this thing? And so for me, this is actually an F-class theory, despite my great love for Joy Boy theories. I think while I would am really into the idea of there being some kind of love or whatever that's a more tangible thing we've had the ability to harness, I just don't understand from this theory the plot line that means that the Will of D also has to be that thing. Just because we've seen joyful people do it, just because we've seen Nika do it, doesn't mean that that has to actually be the connection between the Will of D and the Ancient Kingdom. That
Yeah,
said,
this. Yeah.
I do think there's some more interesting points about what could happen with the power of joy. I know one of the points he brought up in the video is when the fishmen were eventually like recognized by the world government, that would have been a really joyful occasion that they no longer just are relegated to being under the sea all the time. And that could be the kind of thing that powers the giant robot. who then eventually attacked Marajoa. But so I do really like that, and I really, and I think like I think there's a real chance that as we get towards the end of the series, there's going to be a real sense of soul power powering the Mother Flame and potentially being an abundance of source of energy. I know we talked a bit about Philosopher's Stones from Fullmetal Alchemist and something that could potentially be of that nature. So love a lot of the components. I just can't get to this theory being about the Will of D, as in, you know, it's just an F-class theory with the Will of D. The rest of it, I love the components.
Okay. All right. Why don't we go on to the next one, Alex?
Yeah, I think this will tie really well. It comes from O'Hara, who identifies Haki as something that can be physically woven. We've seen Haki imbued into items like swords, but can Haki create objects from quote unquote nothing? He thinks the release of Haki Emmett performed as a possible example. And the extrapolation of this is that the Straw Hat worn by Roger and now Luffy may have been created with Haki. And if it was, there might be a possibility that it is actually the One Piece. Roger having the One Piece all along would certainly be a reason to laugh once reaching Laugh Tale. Jordan, is the world going to clash with Luffy once the truth is revealed? Or is this just an F-class theory?
You know, this theory had me about halfway through. The idea of talking about, it's funny, I saw this video, I didn't watch it, I was considering watching it to bring here. I think the idea of Haki being something that can physically be woven, I think is very interesting to me. Even I like the idea of Haki creating objects from nothing. I think when we see things like the Elder Stars be able to transport themselves through space and time, you wonder if there's a special Haki power that is somehow related to that. I think I even had a theory that I was potentially going to bring and mentioned last week. I need to actually go watch the full thing that was about, that was sort of like in this vein of like, is there something, it just is there something completely different to Haki? Like, is that potentially how Shanks can help transport himself through time and space so quickly as to make it back from Wano to Marineford in such a short period of time? And so all of these things are really interesting and really fascinating, and I think would have really interesting implications for the story. What would not be an interesting implication for the story is Luffy's Straw Hat being created with Haki and just being like a Haki item on his back, and actually the One Piece of the whole it has been there the whole time. And like, at the very least, I need it to explain to me what is so important about this Straw Hat, if it's like a created from Haki Straw Hat, for it to be the One Piece, that's something everyone in the world is fighting over. But no, this theory gives me none of that. Thus, it is an
Oh,
F-class theory.
it's a garbage theory. I didn't watch the video, but just based off of the conclusion that the Straw Hat is the One Piece, Alex brought it up. I was just like, this is just dumb. It is so dumb. You know, we've also, I was thinking after you brought it up, we saw Buggy like stab through Luffy's hat back in East Blue. Like, he like
That's
just
true.
ran his swords, and then Nami like sewed the hat back together to like fix it up for him. So
That's also
is the hat
true.
like 70% of the One Piece at this point? If that's the case, like it would just it would I don't have any good ideas for what made Roger laugh. I haven't heard any great ideas for what made Roger laugh and what the One Piece is personally, but this is not it. This is just it's just not.
And also, why even talk about Laugh Tale? Why is Laugh Tale even a thing? Like, if we get to Laugh Tale and the answer is, you know, it's the friends you made along the way or something that has nothing to do with Laugh Tale, which is like the name of the island. It's a lot, you know, we have a cool named island. There's a log, an eternal pose to somewhere. But that said, I do think that the actual potential implications for what Haki is could be something that's really interesting for the story. And
Sure.
as someone who's really big into the whole world technology type thing, I think that, or ancient technology type thing, I think that as we understand more about Haki and understand more about ancient technology, I think we could get some kind of reveal that it isn't the just like this thing that we have thought it is thus far, which this theory provides an interesting example for. Honestly, maybe if it stopped there, I would have given it an S-class theory.
It would
But
have been better.
alas,
It would
it
have
kept
been better
going.
if it never went into what the One Piece is and all that other stuff. That was so bad.
All right, I think it's time for us to move on to the draft. We had two F-class theories today. Well, I guess one split between S and F and one F-class theory today. Alex, you want to introduce our next draft?
I would love to. So we just wrapped up pretty recently a men's harem draft where we grabbed a bunch of lovely male pirates and other. There's some rule breaking, but we don't need to get into to create two crews that we had two judges vote on. And now we're kicking it back to Katie and Eric to make a women's harem for both Jordan and Abraham to evaluate. I think we're just going to jump right in with a coin flip. Maybe Eric, I'll let you pick heads or tails. I'll go ahead and flip a coin for you, and we'll see who's going to go first. Heads, all right. And we've got tails. So
Oh, I knew he was gonna do that. I knew
I
he
think
was
Katie
gonna do
biased
that.
it. It was for his
Biased.
wife. For his
No,
wife.
I
Oh,
watched
give
it.
my
It's all
wife the
good.
point. Right. So the two people who
I
coin
trust
flip picked
Alex.
it. Yeah. All right. So this is
I
gonna.
love how me and Abraham were clearly both like ready to tea. Like we were clearly both ready to go as soon as he said whatever Eric didn't say.
Yeah. So this is gonna be a snake draft. So it's not so bad for Eric. Katie's gonna get one pick, and then they'll each take two picks each until they've got a full crew of five. So Katie, I think you got a list. You want to kick it off?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think the first pick is probably the most important because I don't know if we would go for the same person, but I have a very clear, like, my favorite woman in One Piece. So, yeah, so my favorite woman that I put on my crew and the first one is going to be Robin. And I choose her because she's very smart. She's got a lot of dark humor, which I find so amusing. And she also has a really complex past, and she's a survivor. So I think she's a really strong person. So, yeah, that's my first pick.
We love strong women here, Katie. We love strong women here.
We do. We do. Robin, I mean, you know what? I don't know. You Jordan, you want to give him feedback with each pick, or do you want to let him run off a couple of picks before we let him know how we feel?
Maybe only minimal feedback, and then we can let it. We can have a midway report. Midway report.
That Robin was definitely justified. It is like being the number one overall pick. That was a good pick, Katie.
With the bangs, the mysterious look, the smarts, just everything.
Okay, Eric, you got two picks in a row. How are you going to respond to that?
Okay, for my first pick, I choose Biola. She stood up to Don Flamingo, and if she chooses you, like she knows you. Also, I don't know, like her story is very complex. She's very, very beautiful, and she knows how to dance. And for my other pick, I have Reiju. Yeah, she's also kind of like she seemed like a bad girl at first, just like Viola, but then they both stood up for Sanji in a way. They both were for him. She had to go through psychological warfare with like this militarized, very patriarchal society, and she came out like good. That I give her props for that, because she just like Sanji, she's also empathetic. She has like strong emotions, but also yeah, she has a very strong spirit, and she's also very, very beautiful. Those are
Yeah, I love
my
the
two
Reiju pick.
first picks.
Yeah. Reiju is that was some I expected. I wanted her to be taken. I expected her to be taken a little bit later, but that's a great pick. She's beautiful. She's a little toxic, so I feel like Jordan probably, is in love with
I don't know why I like
her.
toxic women. What? When is that
I did choose like bad girls, quote unquote, thinking on Jordan.
thing? I will say, you know, I like both of those picks. You know, Robin's obviously a strong start, but I think you're making this difficult to start. You know, now you've left some very obvious openings for Katie too.
Oh yeah. I'm
There's a,
excited.
I feel like the second pick is very clear from Katie, but I will say that Viola is a character that I think is like one of the baddest in the series, who I think gets overlooked a lot when we're in this whole like how many cute characters. I think people sleep on Viola, and she's a hottie with a body. Okay, yes, everyone's a hottie with a body in One Piece, but and being able to dance, you know, I love that. You know, I love a woman who can dance. I love, you know, whether it's a little bit of hitting them with the spins or someone who can throw it back. So that's also a plus. Let's see how Katie responds, though.
So I get two picks now,
Correct.
right? Nice. Okay. Well, so I do want to say too that all the women I picked for their personalities and their backstories, because obviously Oda makes like almost all women in One Piece beautiful. So, well, his idea of beautiful, I guess, like a classic idea. So then the second one that I picked, which I'm excited to take, is Vivi. So she is obviously an awesome character, a member of the Straw Hats. And she has sacrificed a lot for her country. And she has been so determined throughout the story to put her country and her people first, and also her friends. And she really trusts in Luffy, it shows her trust is well placed. So definitely Vivi for my second pick. And then my third pick, because I think I am going for a slightly different theme than Eric, which is cool, but I'll reveal my theme at the end. So my second pick is going to be Komurasaki. So I think
Oh.
from Wano, right? Because she is just one, she's beautiful, and two, she also does sacrifice a lot for her country and puts the greater good of her country before her vengeance. You know, she kind of stews over the Orochi becoming the leader, and she kind of like sits and waits and like raises herself up on her own, and then is able to kind of get into his circle and attack him there. So she also plays music, which is really nice. So you could have her play some music for you, and you can go to concerts together, maybe. I don't know. And also I think it was kind of cool how she gave Zoro Enma in exchange for the Shisui sword to like honor the former samurai that needed his sword back, but still she recognizes that Zoro needs a strong sword. So she's just been a really great ally to the Straw Hats.
We also know that she was the number one, what is it, geisha or whatever, like in one. So
Geisha,
like,
that's the word. Yeah, I forgot for a second.
she's gonna fit right into a harem, is what I'm saying. The Vivi pick is what I was waiting for, and Jordan already knows how much I love Vivi. Katie already knew how much I love Vivi. That's my girl. My top two girls are both on Katie's crew right now, I'm not gonna lie. Vivi is just, she's special. I love Vivi a lot.
I saw this man's face light up as soon as he said Vivi, like this man's crushing, man. This man's in love with
How could
Vivi.
you not? Yeah.
I'm gonna say Vivi's not my personal favorite, you know, like she's obviously like very cute and a strong woman. I can't even tell you exactly why. Just something about her is not quite my type, you know. Maybe she's a little bit too bright and sprightly.
This is why I said Reiju is just toxic enough for Jordan.
I think. There you go.
Let's see what Eric's next punch is.
Yeah, I was gonna
Well,
say maybe Eric, you
okay.
can do just one, and then we'll do a mid-draft review, see where exactly you're landing. It sounds like there's been some implications, but I want to hear who your favorite teams are, and then Eric, you can kick off the back half of the draft.
Okay. Well, for my next one, I was going for someone way more toxic, but I want to get this girl before Katie does. So I'm going to say Boa Hancock.
It had to be done.
It had to be done. She's super, super tall. She has certain authority to her, but also like a very sweet side. I feel like her whole character having to, from being like someone who's in an authority figure to being someone who extends her empathy and like connects to people outside of her nation, I think that's really great. She's also the most beautiful woman in the sea. So I had to choose Boa Hancock. So yeah.
Yeah, Jordan, I'll let you go. I'll let you go, Jordan. This is your girl.
Well, you know, I'll say, you know, yeah, I think Eric said it perfectly, you know, a woman with authority. You know, a tall woman, a woman, a strong woman, you know, over a billion berries. I've been saying she was strong for a long time. I said, no, all this looking down on you gets played as a joke, but Boa is actually strong. She ended up being a character with an over 1 billion berry bounty. I think, you know, what I look at when I see Eric's crew is some strong women. And I am attracted to some strong women. That's not to say that there are not strong women in Katie's crew. You know, more and they all have a certain amount of authority or like strength or ability to persevere. I think like I would describe them as all very resilient characters on Katie's crew who have like gone through a lot and been able to overcome. But I would not describe them as bosses. And I would say I like a boss. And I see a lot of bosses in Eric's. I mean, Boa, I would love her to look down on me. She could look down on me all she wants. Reju has say similar kind of boss energy. She knows how to put it on. And she even though that's not always what she actually shows, it's the facade she puts on for people that is also a real part of her is about strength and authority. And she has that compassionate side. And Viola is just like one of the baddest, most overlooked characters too. So I think we're in a very, I'm leaning towards Eric right now, actually. And it's funny because this is the opposite of the pre-draft prediction, I think. We're going to hear what Abraham has to say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, my number one and number two girls are both on Katie's crew. So it's a, like, I think, Eric, you've done a great job. But like once Vivi went to Katie's crew, I was just like, it's gonna be hard. It's gonna be an uphill battle to swing me over to your side because, like, for me, Robin, not only is she beautiful, but it's just like I feel like I would never be bored around her. Right? She's just like so. She's got so much personality, so much like life experience, like. And I feel like she's willing to wear all these different hats and do all of these different things. Yeah, I would never be bored with her. And
then what do you mean? They all have life experience. Like, how are you gonna get bored with Boa Hancock? You know, it's like she
I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die with Boa Hancock. She's gonna kill me.
You know, other than that, if she does love you, you know, if she does love you because she's in your harem, it's, you know, you're still talking about characters who are queens, who have to manage being or who have to figure out how to manage the different personalities, who have to lead people. And while Vivi obviously is one of the strongest leaders in the series, but when I look at the people in Eric's crew, I think all of them have had to be a leader of a lot of different people, and that's a very, very attractive thing to me.
I wouldn't call Reju a leader. I wouldn't call Reju a leader. I wouldn't. Viola, maybe, but, like, not that much. Me personally, I think, like, all that stuff I said about Robin is true. Vivi, for me, in terms of just pure attractiveness, Vivi is the most beautiful woman in the series for me. Like, wow. That's my girl. She's just got so much going for her. And then she's also just like such a kind person. Now, the thing is, I feel like Vivi is so selfless that it could lead to like, frustration and like boring conversation at some point. But that's why you've got someone like Robin in that harem as well. So I don't know. I right now I'm definitely strongly leaning towards Katie's group because
All right.
Rob, and then that's not even talking about Komurasaki and Komurasaki herself. You know, she has hands. She's the one who killed. She avenged her dad. I love women who are fiercely loyal,
You like
and
women
that
with
girl
hands,
is
huh? That's what I heard
she's
there. You said you like women with hands,
fiercely loyal. And you know, as one of the things I actually like about Viola, you know, I like her passion, but like I feel like Komurasaki has that too. So, you know.
Well, Eric, Abraham really locked in your vote for his harem. Hopefully, with this next pick, you can maybe swing him over. We'll see. What have you got?
Actually, the next one is, I think, even more authoritative than Boa Hancock in her relationships. So I don't think I got Abraham, but as long as I can keep Jordan, I think that'll be okay. It's Bello Betty.
Oh,
Bello Betty,
interesting.
she has a strong personality, but also knows when it's time to comfort in a way. Like, she's mostly about like berating, but I don't know, her whole presentation was like, okay, she's definitely an S. She's definitely knows how to control a situation. She's a leader. She's a leader of a revolution. She's authoritative, but also knows when to, like, it's time to, hey, you know what? Like, after this playing forward of me like berating you and telling you like what you need to do, I'm also gonna like reassure you about your worth. So I feel like that gives him to play for very fun times.
It is very interesting, you know. I do like being motivated by women, you know, Kelly, in the words of Kelly Rowland, Kelly Rowland featuring Lil Wayne. But it's interesting, you know, Bello Betty's an interesting pick. She's one that I feel like I want to see a little bit more of personality-wise. Like, I feel like I've seen her powers, but not so much to see exactly what type of personality I'm incredibly excited about. So I'm intrigued. It's a pick I think is interesting, and I'm not all out on, but it's not up there with those top three for me. You know, like the top three are basically like some of my three favorite women that are not Nico Robbins. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm curious what Abraham has to say and or how Katie's going to respond.
I mean, I love Bello Betty's design. You know, it's mostly just the like she's got the unique clothes and like the short haircut and all that other stuff. It's like it sets her apart from a lot of the other women. And she's also, like you said, she's got a strong personality. She's cute. I don't know if I necessarily want my woman talking to me like the way she talks to the people she's inside my evolution in. I can be sensitive from time to time, and I might get in my feelings a little bit if I had her screaming at me like that. But we'll see. We'll see.
Katie, how are you gonna respond?
Okay, so Eric and I obviously, I think we went with like completely different strategies because everybody on your crew, like I did not have as my like top recruits, which is interesting. I think I like it. I like that we have different attitudes about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. So I mostly picked for me. Like I wasn't necessarily thinking about Jordan and Abraham. I was like, who do I like? Who do I want to be hanging out with? Like, yeah. So also like I said, I didn't actually pick Boa Hancock on my crew. I do think she's beautiful and a boss, but she's too conceited for me and way too judgy. I was like, I can't have that negativity in my harem. So, but I do see why you picked her. So, I get my next two. So I get the whole crew that I wanted. I'm happy about that. My next one is Rebecca. So the gladiator, Rebecca, again, kind of going along with she's a strong woman that had to overcome some obstacles. And but she also has a really good heart because she brought food to people in the prison, and of course that instantly makes Luffy respect her. And she's also gentle, but strong but gentle, because when she was fighting all of her opponents, she forced them out of the ring rather than injuring them or killing anybody. So I think that's pretty special about her. But yeah, that's why I picked Rebecca. Do you want to comment on Rebecca before I give my next pick?
Just give us both. Just give us both.
The next one? Okay. So the final one is the clone Stussy. And I picked Stussy because, well, one, I think she is beautiful. Even though, like, all the women are beautiful, she's especially beautiful. And she's strong. You know, she worked for CP0, but, you know, that was all a facade. She really is looking out for the greater good of the country, protecting Vegapunk, and sacrificing herself for Egghead. Trying to, but it ended up working out for her. And then also she was able to see common ground and become friends with Kaku from CP0. So even though she's working undercover, she still is able to see the good in people and connect with people. So yeah, overall, like, my entire theme was strong women overcoming obstacles that will sacrifice themselves for the greater good. And that's just what I think is, you know, a good strong woman and somebody I would want to be around to motivate me and work with me.
You can say she bites. It's okay. You can say she bites.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I didn't even think of that. Good one.
You can say
now,
she bites.
Now I'm winning over Jordan, right?
That was a big one. Exactly. You know, you can say that. You know, that's all right. You know, don't be shy.
I didn't even think of it. Good one.
I have one concern. One concern. One actually kind of a big concern. That Rebecca is only 16 years old, so now I'm feeling like I might have to stay away from Katie's hair.
The anime
girl.
Age is like anime age, like age times two, you know.
yeah, thank you, Jordan.
it's like Nami's like 19, you know.
I mean, yeah, 19 is not 16.
And 19. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, okay, look, I'm not actually, like, I want to be clear that I'm not actually suggesting there's no difference there. I am really not actually suggesting that, to be clear. Just that I also would not be having these kinds of conversations normally about anyone who is, like, in that age range in such a manner. But these fictional characters are not designed in such
Let me ask, Katie, if I come to visit your harem, can I, like, keep Rebecca in, like, a separate room and then, like, take the women to, like, another room? We can play.
You know, Rebecca can fulfill a different need, right? Like, she can help you train and get stronger and just hang out with you. It doesn't have to all be, you know, Stussy can do the biting, so you can just kind of diversify.
Got a PG room. I'll play board games with Rebecca and stuff like that, but, you know. It's the only concern. I can't catch a case.
Eric, how are you gonna finish it off?
Well, the thing is, I did you originally had Stussy next.
Ooh.
He took it from me, and that's totally okay. I think that maybe I have to think of another one. And haven't seen in a while. It's someone who. It's kind of funny because I feel like. It's almost like they act like they're over, like, the whole thing that's going on in the world of One Piece as a whole. But also, she has gone through a lot. She's super supportive, and she has a very close relationship to one of the Straw Hats. She's Nojiko. She's, she's Nami's, like, kind of older sister. She's very homey. She cares a lot about her community and still cares about the I forgot the name of the fruit, but the orange trees that the Bellamere planted. So
right,
that's for my final pick.
Yeah, wow, I like Nojiko. I like that you were consistent with your theme, Eric. Like, Nojiko fits right in, and she's also like another woman that's just like fiercely loyal. She can keep a secret, you know what I mean? Like, and she's beautiful. She's not like the most, you know, conventionally or, you know, stereotypically beautiful woman in the series, but I think she's bad. I like Nojiko.
You know, I gotta say, had you drafted Stussy, had you been able to draft Stussy, I think this would have been no contest. I don't think Katie really sniped that one at a crucial point in time. At a crucial point in time from you. Nojiko's interesting. I'll say I'm not a huge fan of like the tattoos and piercings type of girl. You know, I like these authoritative women, but you know, who are kind of, I guess, I don't know what the word for not tattoos and piercings and stuff. Like not plain women, but strong and like the, you know, like about their business kind of way, not in like the externally bad girl, but in sort of like the like powerful authority, that kind of thing, which is what does it so much for me about those, you know, the first three, especially, and Bello Betty. I think I like when they have that side to them too, that is like, hey, when we come home, we're laying on the couch, we're laying on the bed, you're all like, hee 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 hee. And then you get out to the rest of the world and it's all like, I'm a boss.
Like
So this is gonna be
discomfort.
really this is gonna be really interesting. I'm gonna have to look through and think about these.
Yeah,
Oh,
what I'd like
we're
to
not
do now
yeah.
is have Katie just run through, reintroduce your crew, give like a one sentence or two sentence blurb about why she thinks they should get both your votes, and then Eric, you can do the same. Just, quick 20 seconds, and then Abraham, Jordan, you can both respond and give us your final verdicts.
I'll start by going one by one, and then I'll tell you why it's stronger than Eric's. So first, there's Robin, who has dark humor, and she's smart, very complex and interesting person. Vivi, who will sacrifice herself for her country and her friends, and is a very strong woman. Komurasaki, who is willing to put her country first as well, but also looks out for her friends and has a lot of talent, like playing music. Rebecca, who is a strong gladiator, but also shows compassion. And then Stussy, who is very strong, and she also can see common ground with enemies as long as they're, you know, reasonable and become friends with them. So I think that overall my crew is stronger than Eric's, because on Eric's crew, you have a lot of strong personalities. I think there's going to be some infighting in Eric's crew. Like, everybody in my crew is pretty friendly, pretty chill, used to hanging out with other women. And I think that because of that, they'll get along. They won't necessarily be jealous of the others. But Eric's crew has a lot of strong personalities vying for attention, might cause some conflict.
That's an interesting take. So my harem involves Viola, who she stood up to Don Flamingo, and knows people really, really well. I have Reiju, who supported Sanji, who's like has gone through like having to show empathy in a world that definitely to survive she had to do otherwise. You have Bello Betty, who's a revolutionary army, has a very, like a very strong authoritative figure, but also there's a side of her that knows when to console. You have Boa Hancock. She's the most beautiful woman in the sea. She's also very, very strong, as you mentioned. Like they're all authoritative, very strong personalities. There's also like a very sweet side to her when she's in love. But she doesn't stop being like this huge woman. And then you have Nojiko, who really cares about her community, who is also kind of like almost like over things. She's very real. She's very on like material. And I don't have anything to say about Katie's harem. I think you did a very, very well done job. Like you went like compare like how all their personalities will mix together, and mine I was just going like I want like bad girls. I want girls who are
I like
strong.
yours too, Eric. Thank
So
you.
yeah.
You wanna give your cast your vote first, Jordan, or you want me to go ahead?
I'm happy to go.
Okay,
So, I've had some time to reflect. And as, let's see, as I was listening to the two of you talk, I know Katie was talking about the infighting that could happen and Eric's crew, things like that. And I was like, what that got to do with me? That got to do with me? Now, beyond on seeing that most of these women are women who have worked in different organizations, and Bo is the only one who's like a queen in that way. So, we might see a certain hierarchy develop anyway. That is not, I'm coming in to be their man at whatever point in time. I think it's going to be okay. And I think that one thing that I'll say that I realized as actually Katie was going through her crew, about something that I generally look for in partners is I am a very strong personality. And it is very easy for someone who has trouble in terms of like making difficult decisions that are the right decision and making decisions that like losing their own sense of self for sacrificing for other people. It is really difficult for that person to not eventually just be overwhelmed by the person that I am. And it does not work well generally with me in relationships. And I think that's part of what I see happening with me in your crew, Katie, is like if someone like Vivi's like, oh, what do you want? Like that's just gonna happen 1,000 times and I'm gonna say exactly what I want, and then she's gonna get mad at me.
Yeah, this is very
Because she's going to be
true.
resentful and like you think Boa Hancock's letting me get away with that? No. Boa Hancock's telling me no, I don't have time for this nonsense. I'm doing this thing that I want. That is part of why I'm attracted to women of this way. And plus, like let you know, just let's just look at how bad these characters are. Viola, I just went and looked at Viola. The salsa dress, the flowery bottoms, the curves all around the. She's a beautiful face as well. They all have some amount of seriousness to them. I think I just really got to go with Eric's crew as the winner today.
Yes.
Nice. Good job. Good job, Eric. I think those are really good reasons, Jordan. I like the self-reflection and introspection included there.
Jordan,
Thank
you
you. I'm glad.
thought about this a lot more deeply than I did because, there probably is more personality. There's definitely probably more personality around Eric's crew than in Eric's harem than there is in Katie's harem. But I feel like if I'm a harem, if I have a harem, it's like, is that real? Am I having a relationship with these women, or is this more just like, like a brothel, right? Like, I don't know how much that stuff really, really matters all that much.
Hey,
And
Melissa, I just forgot to say, well, obviously Robin and Stussy, Robin has the ability to slap in many different ways. Stussy got the biting, but I get the feeling that I'm gonna be able to get a lot of these types of things from someone like, I mean, Reju's not that far from biting. Let's be clear, Reju's not that far from biting.
Reju goes straight to kisses, like,
Yeah, she might get some of that.
and she did not
Boa
ask
will be.
Luffy, which we can discuss what that means, but.
Boa will be violent towards me. And
Oh,
the other
that's
thing is
the problem.
you never know what goes on their side too. Some people who also are very strong on the outside like to sometimes, the other way around in the bedroom is different. So I just before you continue, I just wanted to point out that I also see those benefits, the harem type benefits from Eric's group. Please continue though. For me personally.
Well, I was also gonna say is while they have strong personalities that I think I'm like would genuinely be afraid of 40% of Eric's harem.
Bro,
Like
how hot is
not
that?
yeah,
How hot
yeah.
is
Huh? Hide
that,
that.
bro? How hot
Bro, Boa, I think both Boa and Bello Betty would have me on my toes, and I'd just be like,
that?
I don't think I could deal with it. The I think it was pretty clear before Rebecca, like it was like like going to be a route the other way. I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be Katie's harem. This is going to be Katie's harem. And then we had a 16-year-old girl in the harem. I was like, oh, I don't know if I can send her to Katie's harem because this little girl in the harem. But as long as, you know, the right infrastructure is in place and, you know, I don't need to worry. I don't need to worry about, you know, getting in trouble for anything that may or may not happen in the harem, then it's definitely Katie's harem all the way.
He actually said the right infrastructure is in place.
I need like two separate buildings. Like Rebecca will be housed in one building and have no card access to the other building.
Let's just say it's Rebecca, but she's 20. Okay, let's just say it's Rebecca, but she's 20.
Well, yeah, that's I think we got another split vote. I think I'm gonna go with Katie's harem.
Nice.
That's a beautiful thing. It was contrary to the original predictions of me going with Katie and Abraham going with Eric. We went the other way around, but it was pretty fun. I think if you were surrounded by women of either of these crews, I don't think either of us would be unhappy at all. Yeah. Maybe Abraham would be a little scared.
I do want to say I'm a little surprised that Nami didn't get drafted.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
Okay. In my mind, Nami, like, there's always something about Nami and a girl in almost every island they visit. So she's very departed from, does she like men?
That's fair, but because I agree with you on canonizing Nami x Vivi, that means that Vivi also might not like men.
Yeah. Like, I didn't want to say, but I was like, I feel like it'll be super based if, like, at the end of One Piece, like Nami and Vivi finally meet again, and they just go straight for the kiss, and everyone in the Straw Hats are like, "Wait, what?" They're like, "Yeah, we've been dating all this time. Like, I knew that she was kidnapped, you know? Like, we've been."
That would be
like,
awesome.
Maybe our next draft is like you know, top however many fan couples. We don't have to draft that one. We can just do like non-canonical couples, you know.
Would you ship?
Yeah, ships. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Oda doesn't ship anybody, so that should be pretty easy.
A lot for us, except Senior Pink X, his wife.
True. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't pick Nami because I think she just has a strong person. I mean, you know, good and bad. Has a strong personality. Gets irritated pretty easily. I wouldn't necessarily want her in my harem.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk more soon about, you know, why I would be okay with all of that, you know, as might be in some of the other ones. But I think that's all we got in time for the draft. I can't wait to get into our culture segment. Alex, you wanna get us rolling?
Yeah, sure thing. And thanks again to Katie and Eric for hopping on the pod once again to do another harem draft. That was a lot of fun. For our first culture segment, we got a lot of news about Noah Lyles. He was talking a lot of game before his 100-meter race, but his recent win made him the fastest man in the world. He said in his press conference about Kenny Bednarik and the rest of his competitors, quote-unquote, none of them is winning. In the 200, where he was a heavy favorite. A few days later, things turned out differently with Lyles in third over 200 meters to Kenny Bednarik and the new Olympic champion, Lestyle Tabogo. It was revealed after the race that Noah Lyles had tested positive for COVID the previous morning. Tabogo, the youngest Olympic champion ever, asked if he wanted to be the face of track and field, and he said, I think for me, I can't be the face of athletics because I'm not arrogant and a loud person like Noah. Abraham, what do you think about this big talk from Noah Lyles? Was he right to do this, or is COVID a legitimate excuse?
So, I'll answer your first question first. I think to Tabogo, he's from, is he from Botswana? He's from somewhere.
Botswana,
right? So, he said arrogant and loudmouth, and I don't want to say he meant, like, I feel like it may not have been meant to be as insulting as it came across, because one, there's like, you know, words have connotations to them that I feel like when you're not a native speaker, you don't necessarily get the connotation. Like, because I think to be the face of track and field, you do have to want to be in the spotlight and want attention and whatnot. And so he's saying like arrogant and loud mouth. And I feel like that's probably what he's trying to get at with when saying that. But obviously we see that and he's like, we're like, oh, he's talking shit about Noah Lyles. I've never heard of this guy before, but you know, as someone who knows a lot of Africans, I don't really imagine that he was, I don't think he was talking smack about Noah Lyles and necessarily calling him like some arrogant loudmouth. I think he more meant like,
you don't think when he said arrogant and loud, you think he was calling him an arrogant loudmouth, to be clear.
Yeah, I know. I think he was basically saying, I don't want to be in the spotlight and Noah does. I don't want to be in the spotlight like Noah does. Right. So I don't want to be the face of track and field. And I think that's valid, right? Because there is like a pressure that comes from, you know, like being like a LeBron and being the face of the NBA for 20 years. You know what I mean? Like there's that extra critique that you face, the pressure to perform, all of that. And he might not necessarily want that, right? And then your second question about is COVID a valid excuse? I would imagine, like, you know, obviously, Jordan, you can, this probably hits closer to home to you than most other people, but like, you know, it's hard to run a race if you know, your lungs aren't doing that great because you got COVID. Now, I don't know if he was actually, you know, symptomatic or if he just happened to test positive and whatnot, but yeah. I feel bad for him. I'm not going to say stuff like, oh, you know, he probably should have won if he didn't have COVID because, you know, the event happened and that's just like not a reality that we have to face, right? He lost as much as it sucks. So yeah, I would say it's a valid excuse, but yeah.
I gotta say, I love just to start your ability to hear someone say, I am not arrogant and loud like him, and say he's not calling him an arrogant, loud mouth person. But I get what you're saying with the whole connotation and not being a native speaker. I know a lot of Africans think. But I also think that probably the day after in a press conference, Noah Lyles says, nah, they ain't me. I'm winning. None of them is winning. I feel like the day after someone says that, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of you know, friendly trash talk, right? Of running my mouth when it feels appropriate. I don't know that whatever shade he threw back. My understanding is Africans do also like to throw shade sometimes.
They do 100%. They 100% do.
And that seems like a potential opportunity to have been doing that after beating the guy who in the press conference the day before literally just said, none of them is winning. And I know Noah Lyles, he's a good dude. Like, it's just a little, it's definitely a little bit funny to come out and say that the day before. And what I'll say as it relates to the COVID, because I do think, you know, he's much better over 200 than 100. It seems overwhelmingly likely that if he's actually winning in 100 meters, that he was going to win over 200. I don't think most people would doubt that with the COVID. But I'll tell you, in 2019, I was coming off a great season. The year before I was fifth in the country. I was ranked fourth going in. I think I was undefeated in steeplechases at that point, except for my first race, maybe. I was like undefeated in steeplechases. I had beaten all the guys who, except for the guys who ended up finishing top three, I had beaten everyone from four on down handily that year. And after a 1500 that I won, my knee started hurting, and I basically didn't run for 2.5-3 weeks going into US championships. And in the post-race interview, they asked me about this, they asked me about that. And, you know, I just didn't say anything about because it just felt like an excuse at that point to be like, my knee hurts. That's why these other athletes beat me. Don't get me wrong. Like, I feel very confident even today that I would have come fourth. But to me, it's, I feel like you don't run, you don't, you don't, Like, you got to accept the consequences of running your mouth, of talking that game. And even if the thing that happens is legitimate excuse, if you're going to talk that game, you should have not got COVID.
Did he was he the one who came out and was like, I tested positive for COVID, or like it was
Yeah,
his
he said it
team?
like basically as soon as the race was over. And it's
Oh,
like he
okay.
didn't tell anyone beforehand, and he obviously didn't run on the 4x1. He obviously had COVID. But like basically as soon as the race was over, he's like put, you know, he like put on a mask, he got taken off on like a wheelchair or whatever.
Wheelchair.
The wheelchair's
What?
kind of, you know, listen, I think the thing about sprinting that I'll say is it's like it's not the physical stress of running that's hard, just like muscularly or lungs wise for sprinters. It's the neurological load of like forcing your body to be basically at like 100% for every step of getting the actual of being so perfect that you have to that you get the maximum amount of spring essentially from your body. And so the idea that if one of the things you're dealing with from COVID, like one of the things that I've been tested for, it's hard to actually know exactly. I know other friends who have actually had just like complete autonomic disorders like POTS syndrome from it. Is if your body is unable to like regulate in that way, then going through a 100, a 200 meters, you're actually going to be incredibly taxed in that particular system. Nonetheless, it's sort of like it's just like he came out right after and was like, I have COVID,
Yeah.
you know, like
Yeah.
I'm saying that the first
It's
thing in the interview. I'm not saying good job to Kenny. Sorry, I'm not letting myself eat any crow for this. I'm coming out immediately with the excuse. And I feel like if you talk that game, you got to be ready. Like you got to either not get COVID or be ready to back that up when it comes.
Do you remember when like LeBron was playing the Warriors and he
Right.
scored, he dropped 50 in game one and JR cost him the game, and allegedly he like punched something and like fractured his hand or something. And then after the series was done and they got swept, he came out to the press conference immediately with a brace on his hand.
First thing. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exact, like same kind of thing. Like that might have affected you, yeah. Like, but you also should have not, and obviously saying you should have not punched the thing is easier than not get, but like whatever. Like you should have not punched the thing. And it wasn't even like LeBron was talking that game before the race or
No,
before the game.
it was not. Yeah. I don't know. It's yeah. I agree. So do you like, you know, it's like if I were to lose this TM tournament, right? You know, despite Alex's like sabotage and all of that other stuff, you know, I kind of just gotta eat it if I happen to
Gotta
lose
just
it,
eat it.
right? I agree. If you talk the talk, you gotta be willing to walk it too.
Yep, and let it come out in press leaks 4 days later. After you just like you gotta at least eat it until the press leaks come out, and then it
Yeah.
says, "Oh, Pete, I heard that Noah Lyles," and then it eventually is a big thing.
Yeah.
But in the end, that's all we have for time. Thank you to Eric and Katie for joining us and giving us your women's harems. We absolutely loved all of them. Thanks to
Thank
Alex, your friend who
you.
produced this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. Come back next week for our review of chapter 1123. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking, rating, reviewing us, wherever you get your pods, on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece, and on Twitter at FWROP Pod. Listen, everyone.
Peace.
Thank you.